It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 559. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers, unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, Facebook, facebook.com/miketechshow, and also the page Mike Nation Net. It's been a couple weeks, and I'm glad to be back. I have a jam-packed show tonight. I'm going to discuss a few problems and issues that have been occurring over the last couple weeks. So a lot of stories from in the trenches. I also have a large stack of email that I want to get back to, covering all sorts of topics, Windows 10, follow-ups on using the Square for taking credit cards. Got some tips there. So let's get started. And I want to discuss problems with Windows 10 upgrades that I've been running into with clients. This one was actually under my control. My client gave me his Surface Pro 3 to do the upgrade. And after the update, which looked like everything was fine, logged in with his password, and there was no start menu. I would click no start menu. Anytime I would try one of the Windows 10 apps, it would say it's not available. It's not installed. It won't work. So this was very, very frustrating. And after a lot of research and looking at all the different issues around the start menu not working, here's what resolved it. If you ever run into this, it's a problem with the user profile. I was lucky that the right click would bring up the menu where I had access to the control panel. So I would go to control panel, then I would launch administrative tools, go into computer management. For local users, I created a local system account. Let's say it's just, I called it test, gave it the password test. Then I go to groups and I make sure test is an administrator. So I add the account test to the administrators group. Now I log off. I log in as test and everything's working great. I'm like, wow. So it has to be a profile issue. Now, I could easily just create a new profile for this user from scratch and then start moving everything from the old profile to the new profile. But now that I had access to all of the new Windows 10 menus, which, by the way, if you don't have access to the start menu and you don't have access to any of the Windows apps, you cannot do any Windows updates. It's not available. Because if you go to Control Panel, the traditional Windows update is not there. It's part of the new menu system. So now that I'm in a working profile, I launched the Windows updates, and there are several updates. Do the updates, let it reboot, all the updates successfully finish. I log back in with this user's original account, and everything worked perfectly. Lesson here, make sure you apply all Windows updates during the upgrade process and the installation process of Windows 10. Very, very important. while we're talking about this, and I mentioned this in the pre-show, just make sure that after Windows 10 is installed, the first question it's going to ask, would you like to take the default options or customize? Click customize and say no or turn off every single option that it's asking. Every single one. There's two sets of screens. I want you to turn them all off. Then when you are prompted with, would you like Windows 10 to take over all of the default apps? Uncheck all of those boxes. Then go into Windows 10, and there's still security options that you need to turn off. For right now, make sure you do all the updates, and the first chance you get, launch the update program. And if that doesn't work, then use my process to create another local account, make it an administrator, and then do the updates. That was one. With this user, something I didn't do, and he called me on this, and I had to take care of it. He's an Internet Explorer person. When he launched Edge, which is the dark blue E, not the light blue E, everything's different. Doesn't have everything that he's used to seeing. A recommendation, if everybody's that you're doing this for, right-click and unpin Microsoft Edge for now. Find Internet Explorer. It's still there. You can just open up the File Explorer, navigate to the C drive, go to Program Files x86 directory, then find Internet Explorer, and then when you see iExplorer.exe, right-click, create a shortcut on the desktop, launch it, and then at the bottom toolbar, you can right-click, pin it to the toolbar. Now you got the light blue Internet Explorer, true Internet Explorer for your user. Just another tip. If you're doing this for clients, you want to make the transition as easy as possible for doing the upgrade. Also, a couple things to remember. Windows 7 Pro, Windows 7 Ultimate, Windows 8.1 Pro, and Windows 8 Pro will all upgrade to Windows 10 Pro. There's no Ultimate in Windows 10, so that means Windows 7 Ultimate will upgrade to Windows 10 Pro. If you have, and I might have mentioned this, if you have Windows 7 Pro, which doesn't contain BitLocker for encryption, by upgrading to Windows 10 Pro, you will now get BitLocker. I have a client in a position with 20 laptops that are still running TrueCrypt. When we decide to do the Windows 10 upgrade, which is actually after the first of the year, we're going to slowly start deploying Windows 10 on these systems. We will remove TrueCrypt, upgrade the Windows 7 Pro to Windows 10 Pro, then turn on BitLocker for whole disk encryption. So that helps us get to a whole disk encryption that is supported by a company, Microsoft, and we don't have to pay any additional money. Where TrueCrypt is unsupported now, even though there's no issues, we can still run into some compliance issues because it's not supported. All right, Toshiba Satellite Laptop. The son of an employee for one of my clients had a system that a lot of people were trying to help him with, and I determined it absolutely was a bad hard drive. He did not need anything from that drive. At least he said that, but I noticed there was like 30 gigs of music and a whole bunch of stuff. I put an SSD in. Instead of just replacing the hard drive, I put an SSD in the laptop. I was able to take that drive that wasn't booting and all kinds of trouble. I hooked it up to my SATA to USB device, and I was able to get all of his music files, all of his data files. I put them all back onto the system. I installed Windows 8.1 because that's what was there, and it naturally installed where the key is embedded in the BIOS. So remember, if you're redoing Windows 8 or for 8.1, or for that matter, Windows 10, use Microsoft's media creation tool. That is the best way to get the media to do your install. it worked perfectly. I didn't even need the key. And then right away, it wanted to install Windows 10. I did the upgrade. So this way it was under my control and I was able to do it. Brought the system in the next day and he gave it to his son. I got a phone call that night from his son thanking me so much because the system was phenomenal. Just a couple things to remember, and I had some trouble figuring this out. When you want to boot from a CD or USB, you want to get the drive options, the boot options on a Toshiba satellite, you have to hit the F12 key while you're hitting the power button to turn it on. It was the only way I could get it. Every time I kept hitting F12, it wouldn't do it. But if you hold down the F12 key while you're powering it on, no problem. Just a tip. If sometimes you hit a function key and you can't get the desired result and you know you're hitting the right function key, hold it down while you're powering on the device. That's a good tip. Gmail has changed their security policies for not allowing what they call less secure devices to connect to Gmail. They consider Outlook a less secure device. So during the process, while Google and Gmail, they were changing their security policies, they added an option in your settings. My client kept trying to get to his Gmail account from Outlook on his MacBook and Outlook from his Windows desktop. He knew he changed the right password. It wouldn't work. I said, give me your password. I'm going to look on the web and I'm going to log into the web version of Gmail to get your mail. And I'm going to look at the settings. I looked at the settings and you need to change the security setting to allow less secure devices. And you need to check that in the security settings of Gmail. If you have Google Apps, that option is not there. So keep that in mind. This is pure Gmail accounts. Office 365 renewal. Wait to hear this. I was in an airport over a year ago when I had to produce a quote before my plane took off for a client. And I needed to do this in Excel. And Microsoft had just released for the iPad Word and Excel and PowerPoint. But you needed Office 365 in order to download that and activate it on your iPad or your iPhone. And I purchased through the Apple Store on my iPad Office 365 Personal, which gives you 5 machines that you can access Office. So you get full 5 machines for Office and 5 tablets. I said, boy, this is perfect for me because I have several machines. I want to be on the latest, greatest of Office. I also have lots of Macs. I also have my tablets. This is perfect. 10 of my devices, and it's just $99 a year. No problem. Bought it without even thinking. Just purchased it. Then I activated Excel, and I was able to quickly do this proposal and emailed it to my client. Perfect. It's now a year later. I was warned a couple weeks ago, that iTunes said, we're going to renew your Office 365 for $99. I said, sure, no problem. Because, by the way, you also get a terabyte of OneDrive cloud storage. I love it. I figured this was going to be easy. Apple charged me the $99 plus tax. I got the receipt in my email. So now, all of a sudden, a week later, I try to use Office 2016, which came out a couple months ago for the Mac. I tried to use that on my iMac, and I couldn't use Word. It said, you're not activated. You know, your subscription expired. I logged on, and it's to my Microsoft account. It said, the subscription expired. I called Microsoft, and Microsoft told me your subscription expired, and I explained where it renewed. I renewed this on Apple. He said, you're going to have to call Apple and sort this out. I went to the forums. There are many, many Apple users who have bought Office 365 for Microsoft through the Apple Store and had the same problem I'm having on the renewal. Apple has a problem communicating that renewal to Microsoft. The only fix for this is for Apple to refund your money and then you go on to Microsoft's site and do the renewal. And that's why I'm bringing this up for anybody that's in that situation where if you bought Office 365 from Apple, yeah, it's good for the first year, but the renewal will not work. Long story here, but to make it, do not use Apple to buy the Microsoft licensing for Office 365. Avoid Apple because they can no longer communicate with Microsoft. And this has been going on for quite a while, it seems. You have to just go to Microsoft and originally make the purchase from Microsoft. So this way the renewals will stay there. I spent a couple hours one evening trying to sort this all out. And it was ugly where I'm yelling at Apple. I'm yelling at Microsoft and I'm not getting anywhere. And then finally, someone from Apple I had to get a hold of on the iTunes side of the house understood because they have been through this with a lot of other customers that had this same problem. Quick comment, if you have a Synology and a Quick Connect account, there was a maintenance a couple weeks ago where Synology maintenance disabled the Quick Connect account. If you're one of these people or you have a client that uses Quick Connect and uses Synology, you have to log on to Synology, the local Synology NAS interface, log in as an admin, and then go to Control Panel, go to Quick Connect, and re-enable it. Set it up, and you may have to click to activate, where it'll send an email that you then got to connect. I had to do this for one of my clients that fell in that scenario that he likes to use the Quick Connect website to be able to download and access files from his Synology NAS when he's outside of his office. Just wanted to make sure anybody who has a Synology gets that. That's my tech tips from the trenches and things, just a small smattering of the things I've been working on. Let's get to some email here. This is from Mark, and it's a follow-up on Square, which is the service and the device for being able to take credit cards from your iPhone. I've been using Square in my business for years. When using Square, you can avoid the extra 0.75% processing fee by setting up your own Square store and processing payments through it rather than typing in the credit card number in the app. And he gives a link to his store. And here's the instructions from Square. Alternatively, you can email an invoice from the Square app. When the customer pays, you will be charged the 2.75% fee. Instead of 3.5%, which is what I've been paying when I take a credit card. Great link, great tip from Mark. Thank you. And I will post that link in the show notes. This is from Steve. Thanks for the show. Square allows for you to email invoices to your customers. Same thing. Log into your account, the website, and then select invoice. Put in your customer info, email address, and description of services and amounts. Square will email you your customer and send you a copy. Your customer can pay online, putting in their credit card info. You will get confirmation, and Square will only charge you 2.75%. The 3+% is only if you use the Register app and manually key in the credit card info, which is what I was doing. Since the risk is higher to Square, I use this frequently for customers that want to pay an invoice via credit card. I only wish they could do reoccurring billing this way for my monthly billing customers. Steve, great tip, and I'm going to have to embrace this. I hate paying anybody. I hate giving away a percentage of my income for convenience of taking the credit card. I'd rather take the check, but then I have to go through the process of depositing the check. I get it. I don't take a lot of credit cards, but I'm starting to because I would rather that than have to wait and beg for a check or beg for payment. At least it's instant. But you got to give up that 2.75%. This is from Bradley. Thanks for all your help. Love the show. Are you familiar with any decent wireless routers that I can manually put in DDNS setting like OpenDNS? Most I have looked at don't allow the IP addresses to be input and only allow the available options to be used, and none include OpenDNS. Thanks, Bradley. I want you to look at the ASUS that I always recommend, and it's the RU668. I will put that in the show notes. Take a look at that and buy it from Amazon, because if it doesn't work out for you and it you don't like it, or go to Best Buy, and if it doesn't work for you, you can always return it within 30 days. And that's the nice thing about sometimes buying from the big box store where they have a nice return policy. But also, Amazon is incredible with the return policy. Okay, this is from John, and this is how to make a virus analysis computer. This was asked a while back from a listener. Hi, Mike. Great show. In show 555, I think, you had a question from a listener on how to make a virus analysis computer. I am a malware analyst, and here is my take. 1. We call this type of computer a malware analysis sandbox, or simply a sandbox, and you can search online for a wealth of information, including several good online malware analysis sandboxes, including Anubis and Payload Security. There is a good list online from a popular malware analysis instructor named Lenny Zeltzer. Lenny also has an excellent malware analysis Linux toolbox called Remumux. To build your own malware analysis sandbox, you want to probably start with virtual machines that can be rolled back to pristine state after each analysis. I use Oracle VirtualBox, but there's other solutions from VMware, Microsoft, among others. I really endorse Oracle VirtualBox. That works great. 3. Ideally, you want to statistically analyze and identify the suspicious files prior to running them in your sandbox. I generate MD5 and SHA hashes and extract strings from the file. I use the tools formerly known as the Malware Analysis Pack, which can be found on GitHub. You can also do this online with the website VirusTotal. Once you generate an MD5 hash for the piece of malware, you can often Google the MD5 and find analysis of the file that someone has already done, saving you a lot of time. 4. You need a way to track changes that are made to the sandbox when you run the viruses, especially registry settings. A good starting tool is called RedShot, which you can find on SourceForge, but there are others. 5. You need a way to monitor network traffic on the sandbox. This is perhaps the most important piece because it will help you track down other infected computers in your organization. I run Wireshark and a tool called SniffHit on my home sandbox. This is just a tip of the iceberg. There is a wealth of information online from other malware analysis, and there is a cat and mouse game between malware analysis and malware writers that is ongoing. For example, some malware looks to see if it's running in a virtual machine. If it is, then it stops running. For this type of malware, the analyst needs what is called a bare metal sandbox, and this is not a virtual machine. Wow. There are also some open source and commercial sandboxes that do all of the above types of analysis automatically, and others much better. One open source sandbox is called KuCo, and there's a link. I hope this helps, and thanks for the opportunity to contribute to the Mike Tech Show. And this is from John. John, thank you for that complete detailed analysis on how to build a malware sandbox. That's great. Thank you very, very much. This is from Tyler. Major changes coming from Microsoft will impact your career. Windows Server, System Center, and every other key Microsoft product are now undergoing fundamental architectural and design changes. And if you don't adapt to them and embrace cloud computing, your career in IT likely will be cut short. Regardless of how much experience you have as an MCSE or MCSA, Pluralsight Curriculum Director, Don Jones pointed to key changes coming from Microsoft that'll have a major impact on the careers of IT pros and developers who specialize in all or any components of the Redmond stack. The changes in Windows Server 2016, the move towards system automation, the shift to application-based containers, Microsoft's cloud-first approach, and a move to continuous updates will all require IT pros to gain new skills. Speaking of the Tech Mentor Conference on Microsoft's main campus in Redmond, Washington, which, like Redmond, is produced by 1105 Media, Jones' stern warning to attendees was to keep up these changes and get educated accordingly, or run calculations on the days you have until retirement. The link to the article's here, and I'm going to put that in the show notes. The point here is you don't want to stay static in your own technical world. You got to have an open mind. You got to keep reading. You got to move forward. Great example is I know some of my competitors still embrace hard iron servers. You have to embrace cloud computing. You have to. It's here. It's here to stay. Anybody who's still tied to server-based hardware, unless there's an absolute need, you got to embrace the cloud for solutions. It's picking the right cloud solution. Give you an example. I've spent countless hours vetting, searching, and testing for FINRA compliant cloud storage and syncing services to properly sync files from a local company to a secure cloud solution. And they have to be FINRA compliant, HIPAA compliant. FINRA is the financial industry compliance. HIPAA is medical. These are important compliances that the vendor that you're selecting must prove that they are compliant with. Then you can properly use them because now we can trust that it's secure. And for years, there were not proper secure storage places online. Right now, even Box.com, as big as they are not 100% FINRA compliant. Keep that in mind when you're vetting different services and you're trying to see. Now, with these compliance and security, certainly you're going to pay a premium for those services. But I found one in Vault America, which happens to have very reliable, good cloud syncing services, good cloud-based backup, and I'm very, very happy. This is from Chris. Hi, Mike. I'm looking for someone that can remotely support a specialized software product used in the printing business called PSI. It's pretty old software, and unfortunately, the company that owns it is now and won't provide per incident or hourly support. If you could pass the word along to your listeners, that would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you could recommend any other places I could look for someone that can help with this, that would be great. I've tried the obvious places like Craigslist, Google searches, LinkedIn, etc., and haven't had any luck. This is from Chris. Anybody who has any experience with the printing business called PSI, let me know so I can pass on that information to Chris and connect you together, and you'll have a business opportunity here. This is from Terry. Terry from Arizona here. At work, I get good support from Dell. I get a response from the tech support for companies under warranty immediately. Home support is another matter. Someone gave me an Alienware computer to fix. The hard drive was totally dead. The Alienware computer had non-Windows 7 sticker on it. I had the owner order reinstallation media on a USB. I expected to be able to get the laptop to the way it was from the factory. The Dell rep I chatted with said all the drivers were on the USB. When the USB arrived, it was just reinstallation media for Windows 7 Pro. I had a heck of a time getting the correct wireless driver. The driver from the Dell website crashed. The wireless driver from Slim Drivers made the computer blue screen. An email to Dell only received a canned response. Home order support chat was either offline or an infinite waiting time. I eventually was able to find the correct driver, but it took a long time. No help from Dell. Thanks again for the great show. Thanks for the story. And he's right. Dell support, and you really want the Dell Pro support. If you have a server or if you're in a company in the corporate environment, Dell support is phenomenal. I know. I've experienced it. Pay the extra money for the Pro support, and you cannot be out of warranty. You're a home user out of warranty, game over. You are not going to get any help. Stay within the warranty. Keep the warranty current. Buy the Pro support, and you will be happy. This is from Joe. I am a new listener to your show, and I am enjoying it immensely. I am hoping to tune in live for this week's podcast. I work in IT as an application analyst, and I am trying to expand my skills into hardware as well. So I'm not very experienced with hardware testing, but with the right guidance, I am comfortable with getting my hands dirty. I have a laptop. I am working on diagnosing an issue. I would like to test the power adapter. However, I can't seem to find any information on how to test the type of cord it uses. It is a 4-pin DC female connector on an FSP Group Inc. model FSP220 unit. I was wondering if in your tech tips, you could address how one might test this with a multimeter. Boy, I'm not good at testing the power supplies of laptops. I have one for the desktop, and it's very easy for me to just unplug the cables from the motherboard, plug it into this adapter, and it tells me whether the desktop power supply is good or bad. When it comes to laptop diagnostics, I am not your man when it comes to hardware. I've gone to the manufacturer's website, which is what I was going to recommend, and I cannot locate any schematics on the plug configuration, and my repair manuals do not cover this plug configuration. So I am not sure how to place the probes and identify hot and ground. Unfortunately, there is also no LED indicator on the adapter box itself. I have attached photos if that would be helpful. I appreciate your time. You know what? I'm not the man for this. I'll see if I can put you in touch with someone that can help you that's better qualified at laptop hardware diagnostics than I am. Here you go. Uncle Al in the chat just said BrightTech tests a power supply. Joe, we'll try to find someone to point you into the right direction for this. This is from Will. Network tool tips. Win 10, fresh install, offline. For individual PCs or small networks, he has three links here. Generate account use reports, individual PC internet monitoring bandwidth use, set audio alarm thresholds, notifications, graphic meterings of bandwidth. I use networks to sound alarms if my PC goes offline for more than a few seconds. And I drop my automated daily stream capture recording. I use it on WinXP Win 7. Don't know if it runs on Windows 8 or Windows 10. This is from Will. And again, he has a couple great links here. I will put them in the show notes. This is from Brian. Hi, Mike. Further to your heads up about Windows 10 privacy, here in the UK, a lot of debate is going on about the new updates for Windows 7 and 8 being put out by Microsoft, and the update numbers are, and he has 1, 2, 3, 4 Windows updates. The press is reporting that these updates are for diagnostic telemetry tracking services, which are the same or similar as in Windows 10, per your warning in one of your shows. The concerns here seems to be to uninstall these updates and hide the updates. Your thoughts on uninstalling these updates would be most welcome. As I write, I have not checked to see if I've downloaded these updates, but not sure of the way to go. If they are there, I'm not sure you will be looking into these updates at some time, if you have not already. I'm looking forward to your thoughts on one of your shows. Fantastic show. Keep up the good work. And this is Brian. Brian, I got to take a look at these. These are knowledge bases, and I'm going to read them. 306-8708. 302-2345. 307-5249. And 308-0149. We need to look these up and see. I don't want to just start uninstalling updates for the possible future ramifications of what it does. We need to look at these updates, see exactly what they're fixing, and then decide whether you should just uninstall them or not. There's a lot of confusion on Windows 10, even after you turn off the security settings that shuts off reporting back to Microsoft and sending data back to them, that it's still sending data back to Microsoft. And we need to make sure this is happening, because if your operating system is still sending info back to Microsoft, even though you tell it not to, you're going to break a major compliance with HIPAA. And this is a big concern with Windows 10. And I'm still not sure 100% that you can completely turn off all of the chatter back to Microsoft and reporting information back. This is still an open issue. And it seems like Brian's still concerned about this in the UK. We will follow up on that. This is from Mark. I'm often asked by family and friends to troubleshoot problems with their computers. While I don't mind helping out, they often want to have a conversation with me while I'm trying to fix their machine. I find it hard to concentrate on the problem at hand while having a conversation with them about something else. I was wondering if you ever ran into this, and if so, what do you do? Love the show. Thanks, Mark. Mark, I run into this all the time, but it's not family and friends. It's clients. If a client is really distracting me, then I will mention it and I will ask them to politely hold off until I'm finished, because I don't want to make a mistake and I don't want to have a problem. And normally they'll just, oh, I'm sorry, and they'll walk away and everything's fine. But I find sometimes I'm part consultant, part analyst of I have clients that like to dump and talk about their personal problems and talk about, I feel like I'm a pair of ears that's willing to listen. And sometimes that gets tough, you know, where you're hearing all of this, or you're, you know, especially if you're at a home office and there's events or things happening around there that, you know, you wish weren't happening while you were there. Lots of great stories. I politely listen. I try to stay focused at the job at hand and then diplomatically tell the person that I need to concentrate on this. Usually, if I mention that or say that, you don't ever have to say that again. You just got to be polite, but you also got to stand up for you need to concentrate on the problem at hand. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. I also want to remind everybody that if you purchase from Amazon or know anybody that uses Amazon to buy any items, please use my link, amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to support the Mike Tech Show, and I greatly appreciate your continued use of that link. And again, that's amazon.mikenation.net. Thank you so much for supporting the show, for supporting the sponsor, Instant House Call. Remember, you go to instanthousecall.com, download the 15-day trial, use the promo code MikeTechShow. You will be very happy that you did. It's a great remote support software. That's it for tonight's show. I will see everybody back here. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.